Hello and welcome to another episode of Bad Choices in Bourbon. I am your host, Dan Decker, coming to you worldwide from the Toad Suck Studio in beautiful central Arkansas, USA, the heart of America. We are back this week with one of my very special guests. I am thrilled to have him on the show. He is an independent artist, independent author, writer all over the place, and a general cool guy who podcasts so many shows. I can't list them all. Just a wonderful opportunity to have you here, Mr. Dan Morin. Thank you for coming to Bad Choices in Bourbon. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. That was a delightful introduction.
Thank you very much. So basically, as I let everyone know, we're going to get started at the beginning of you. And if I've done my math correctly, that's somewhere 79, 80. Is that about right?
When you arrived on the planet? Oh, yeah, I've done your math.
1980. Yeah. 1980. It's a good year except for everything except Battlestar Galactica.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. As I was, you know, as they say, I was born at a young age in 1980. And yeah, and it's progressed from there.
Yeah, so you're on the East Coast now in Boston. Has that been where you have always been?
Pretty much. I was born outside of Boston. Grew up in the same place, basically. Went to school in Western New York with a brief stint. I studied abroad in Scotland for a little while. And
oh, wow.
After graduation, came back and moved outside of Boston, basically been here ever since. I mean, with some, you know, slight jaunts here and there, but yeah, I feel like it's weird. I guess I never really had the intention to go very far from home, and that's just the way it worked out.
Well, you know, I do live within 20 miles of the place that I was born, and I haven't traveled much outside of Arkansas abroad, but I have been to a lot of these 50 some odd states, nothing really to speak of. I have not been to Boston or that area, which is a failure because we have one of my middle son's godparents live out there, and you know, we should definitely go and visit.
Yeah, you should
sometime.
Make the trip. Yeah. It's a good place. I have been to Arkansas, but I've also been to most. I don't want to say I've been to like upwards, maybe close to 40 states. I've driven cross country a couple times, which helps. So I've driven through the Ozarks in Arkansas, which is lovely country.
It is. It's very pretty.
And, yeah, I can't. I don't think I've made it. I'm trying to remember where I think we camped there somewhere. But yeah, this was 23 years ago or so. So it's been a while. It's been a while.
That's about the same time I came to where I am now, about 23 years ago. So I live in a little burg called Conway, which is the Conway in Conway Twitty, home to American Idol Chris Allen and 28 roundabouts.
28. That's pretty good. We like our roundabouts up here in Boston, but I don't know that we have 28 in like a single city.
Oof. It's so that every new intersection gets a roundabout. All the crappy old ones are getting remade into roundabouts. It's nice. Once you get used to them, traffic flows much more easily. So,
I agree.
Well, you know, you're kind of stuck around the hometown area. So what interested young Dan growing up?
Oh man. Always stories, I think, is the big sort of through point. And that was like writing stories. It was reading stories. It was watching, you know, stories on TV and comic books and all of that. So I was a, you know, surprising no one, giant nerd. I think probably my earliest entries were reading like, you know, sort of kids fantasy, YA fantasy, that kind of stuff as a youngin, and then starting to write stuff basically. Yeah, as soon as I could put pencil to paper, I pretty much started writing stories. And I remember in second or third grade, I wrote these sort of adventure stories about young kids finding themselves in a different world. And a friend of mine would, she was an accomplished artist, so she would draw pictures for them. And I always laugh because she's gone on to actually be a successful cartoonist. and so that was cool. I'm a big fan of hers still. And so, yeah, I did a lot of that. Loved, you know, I was a giant Star Wars fan, as I remain to this day. And, you know, had a bunch of the Star Wars action figures. I mean, you know, loved all sorts of those Saturday morning cartoons from the 80s. Pretty much anything that could transport me to a different world, I was super, super into.
Nice. So I can kind of tell you with the Star Wars action figures, I got a story that kind of lands on a lot of these things. So late high school, early college years is 93, 94. So I had some real cherry comic books, you know, mm-hmm. from the time, like Jim Lee's first X-Men cover, the Robin number one, Batman's back getting broken, just, you know, the the first issue of Tim Drake's introduction, just a whole bunch of really cool stuff that I collected because I was buying them when they were new. Well, I owed a friend some money. And so he came and pilfered my collection.
Oh, no.
And, you know, most of which I still have, but he had long since, you know, given away those books or whatever it was. So he, you know, they didn't mean as much to him as they did to me, obviously. But he made amends years later after I'd had kids, and he sent me 3-gallon Ziploc bags full of Star Wars figures and accessories for the boys to play with. And there were some new ones, some vintage, some, you know, from all of the, you know, when we had Chunky Han and Chunky Luke. But yeah, you know, kind of salved up the wound a little.
That's the traditional exchange rate is, you know, several gallons of Star Wars figures per comic books.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured as much. Yeah. No. And, you know, he made a huge mea culpa and what a huge dick I was comment. And I was like, yeah, we're good. But yeah. Okay. So early writing, just remember, dear listeners, my friend Dan here is a writer, and he's published 3 books. Yes.
Yep. That's right.
3 books. Okay. All featuring, Simon Kovalik, but not all, Galactic Cold War stories, correct?
Yeah, it really, that's a semantic distinction, honestly. And people ask me about this a lot, and I keep saying I need to write like a FAQ for my website, which I should do. The reasons behind that are that there was a publisher change from the first book I published to the next 2 books I published. So Technically the series only encompasses the next 2, but if you read The Caledonian Gambit, it takes place before those 2 and has pretty much the same characters. It's set in the same world, et cetera. Exactly. So a lot of people have sort of dubbed it Book Zero, which is what I've sort of adopted as that. It's considered a prequel. So not officially part of the series, but unofficially.
I mean, it's out there like Legends content, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's canon content. In my mind. It's canon, but it's
exactly.
Just, you know,
and well, you're the author. You get to say. So, you know, there's this.
Thank God.
There's this argument out there in the world where, oh, that is not Star Wars. That is not Star Trek. Well, you know what? You're not the IP rights holder, and so until you are, it is what they say it is, and you just have to find a way to incorporate it or don't watch it.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know,
fine. You don't have to read it. It's cool.
Yeah,
I'm down with
it. I suggest you read Dan's books, though. So so we've got the Caledonian Gambit and then the Bayeran Agenda, which is officially book one, and the Aleph Extraction, which is the latest book that came out just at the 1st of May, right?
Yeah, around then. Yeah, it was a little weird because of the pandemic stuff. So it was supposed to come out in mid-May, but some of the stuff shipped early. It was very confusing. We'll just say May. May is fine.
Yeah, May's good. May's a good month. The month I was born in. It's a good month. So, yeah. I had to listen to you correct enough people, enough times that, I've hopefully pronounced the, Aleph Extraction correctly.
You did good. One of these days I'll write a book that can't be pronounced multiple ways. because literally all of them, people have different ways of pronouncing them. And I'm like, well, I say this and people's like, yeah, but technically should we pronounce that? And I say, yeah, it's
technically
fine.
I'm
whatever.
The writer.
That's cool.
So my favorite thing to tell people and to remind people, and, you know, you really can't argue the source, is that all words are made up, quoted Thor Odinson.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
He told us in Endgame. He's like, oh, that settles it. So what are some of your earlier stories? Is there anything previous to the books that's been published?
No, I don't think there's anything that's been published. I did write 3-ish novels that will never see the light of day, including... most of a trilogy, 2.5 books of a trilogy that I never quite finished because I had that moment of like, well, should I keep investing time in writing the 3rd book in this trilogy that nobody has published either the 1st 2 books and very few people have read either of the 1st 2 books? And or should I work on something that actually is new and has a likelihood of getting out there? So I spent a long time, several years working on this trilogy, which is sort of a post-apocalyptic fantasy sci-fi mix. And a few people have read some of it I, you know, every once in a while, I think I should go back and see if there's anything worth salvaging in there. But at the same time, I, you know, I'm a busy person. I probably got better things to do than write crap, read crap that I wrote like 15 years ago.
It's like going back to code you wrote 15 years ago and I want to stab this guy in the eyes.
What was I thinking?
Yeah. Or obviously I wasn't. So writing those, is that your main passion? I guess it has to be if you're going to devote your life to trying to pull a living out of it.
Yeah, it's been,
which we all know is super easy to do, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. They just throw bags of money at you. You gotta be careful.
That's what I heard.
The head injuries are risky with those bags of gold coins. Let me tell you. You know, that's always been the thing that I've been most focused on. And of course, I came out of this from a career in journalism as a technology journalist, which I still do now as a freelancer.
Six colors, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Sixcolors.com. I worked for many years at Macworld, where I was an editor and wrote a lot of stuff for that. And so that, you know, and that was, I started doing that when I was in my mid 20s, which was my second career, because I started as a, IT person and a web programmer.
Oh, wow.
As many of us do. And so I spent a few years at that before I actually moved into writing. So like technology and writing were sort of the two main things that I did. So combining them into writing about technology seemed like a natural conclusion. And it was certainly a lot easier to get my foot in the door there than it was with fiction,
especially in
that era. Like it was mid-2000s and like there, all the new blogs were popping up. And like there was really, I think, a very new and sort of unexplored community in terms of blogs and online publications, and especially about technology and the likes at that point. So it was a good time to get started in that arena.
It was, you know, it was the nascent John Grubers of the world. We're stepping out into the internet and finding a way to hack out a living, putting bits to screens.
Oh, yeah. Right? I remember reading John basically when he, pretty close to when he started writing during Fireball. And of course, you know, years later now, like he's a pal, but like,
yeah, exactly.
I still remember being a guy just reading him and John Siracusa and their various places. And now these are people that I talk to fairly frequently.
I know.
It's weird.
It's amazing. I have that same feeling with you guys. It's like, wow, I've been listening to these cats for so long and now I get to talk to them. And you know, John Gruber's on my radar. I just have to step out and reach out to him, but we'll see what he says.
He's a good guy. He's got a very public persona as being kind of a I don't know how to put it politely, but he's a big teddy bear.
He would tell you that though. He would say, oh, I'm a huge curmudgeon, you know?
Yep.
But
exactly.
He's not probably. Yeah. But you gotta be abrasive out in public or people want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. And part of it is also just it's a voice, right? It's like not quite a shtick, but it's like, you know, it's a personality. He's exactly. Cultivated that personality.
Well, and you know, I do the same thing, man. You know, I'm on Twitter. You've seen my handle. I don't lean into it hardcore, but I do play to it a little bit. You know, and that's to kind of, you know, we have reasons that we put on the masks that we do where
sure.
we are. And it's, you know, it's not inauthentically me, but it's not Dan Decker. It's the Commodore
right.
Decker, right?
It's more you than I'm trying to think of the ways, but it's like a distilled version almost.
Exactly. Like it's the me I want it to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's still me, but it's not 100% because not, you know, I try to keep the personal drama out unless I'm just feeling
sure.
like a complete turd, you know?
Oh yeah. Same.
But from time to time, you got to let it out. but yeah. So podcasting. Is a big part of what you do as well as writing. Oh, I was going to tell you one thing. I'm going to send you Macworld related. I'm going to send you a photo. DM you Twitter. It's one of those pictures that goes on the senior reel when you embarrass your children at the end of their high school career. and I'll send that to you, my oldest son. You'll hopefully get a good chuckle out of it. But circle back to podcasting. How long have you been doing that?
First, I would say right around the time I started my first foray into professional writing was I started as a freelancer working for Macworld's Mac user blog.
Oh, Mac.
And yeah, so this was 2006.
Yep.
And
early podcasting.
Yeah, I started a Mac user podcast because Macworld had started its podcast. And so I was like, oh, well, you know, we've got our little crew over here at Mac user. I'll just learn to make podcasts. And so I started doing that a bit. And that was kind of fun. I enjoyed it enough that I convinced my good pal, Tony Sindelar, who is now regular podcaster, he and I should do a show. Yes. He and I should do a show, which we called the Doomcast, which was just this very bizarre show that we recorded where we get on Skype. We didn't live very close together at that point, but we get on Skype and we talk for, like an hour and a half. And then we just riff. It was all like kind of just improv riffing. And then we'd slice it up and get like little, like 3 to 5 minute segments that we thought were funny bits. And we just glue these together. And it was a super surreal show. I think maybe a dozen people listened to it, all people that we knew, including a friend of ours who was going through grad school and was having he was super stressed and busy. And he's like, I love listening to you. It's great to listen to you. It's like listening to my friends and getting to chat, even though I don't get to talk back to you guys. So at some point we felt like we were just making this show for him.
I understand that feeling.
Yeah, right. But it's like he is a person who was like legitimately a long-term friend of ours, and we had known him since we were really young. And like he could have just called up and he's like, no, I just like to listen to you guys talk. Like, all right, that's exactly. Fine. We'll do that for you.
Exactly.
So we did a bit of that. And then at Macworld, I was on the Macworld podcast a bunch. I didn't really host it, but I did do some bits. Actually, funny enough, one of my first assignments on the Macworld podcast was, hey, we want you to call up John Gruber and interview him, which was literally the first time I ever talked to John.
That's hilarious.
They asked me to interview him for a podcast. And I was like, oh, yeah, why don't you just ask me to get like the second coming of Jesus on the phone? Sure, I can probably find John Gruber. He'll want to talk to this schmo.
Well, it's funny because I actually subscribed to the RSS feed back in the day when he first started and he paid users could buy a subscription. So mm-hmm. I still have my you get it for free t-shirt for buying a subscription that says your PC is a POS. And that's one of my most treasured t-shirts. You know, I'm a t-shirt junkie, so I've got that and several others and a hoodie. I pretty much buy a t-shirt at least every other year. Nice. Because I wear them out. Yeah. And then last year, at Dub, when he did the live show, I had a friend on a career experience out at the mothership. And so he got to go to that, and he was sending me pictures of oh, look, here's John Siracusa. Oh, look, here's so-and-so. And I was like, it's one of those things where it's like, there's just a circle of people who are going to get excited that you know or see these other people, and no one else in the world has any clue who they are, it's great to be able to, connect with someone like that in the moment where you're like, oh my God, I think it was the writer for, The Force Awakens who tweeted, don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
Get the moment, you're like, don't screw this up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's important.
It is important. But you, so you started in 2006. I did a podcast with a friend in 2006, or for a friend, I should say. And it's amazing how much has not changed other than the ease with which you can put one out there. I bet you guys had folks doing it, but for my friend, it was me, a MacBook at the time, a PowerBook even, and Skype and Audio Hijack.
I was using GarageBand pretty much for all my editing. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just hosting it on a WordPress blog at the time that my friends
and you
had
to write
had,
the
and
RSS
that was it.
Yourself.
Yeah.
I handcrafted that RSS. It was hard.
Oh man, that's not fun. I don't want to. I think when did podcasting really kind of take off? 2003 was sort of the first big-ish, 2004 mm-hmm. somewhere in there. So it was still kind of. I think the inspiration for that might have been, if we get the dates right, the You Look Nice Today with Merlin Mann and Adam mm-hmm. Lissagore and Scott Simpson. I think that was when it first started, and that was kind of the inspiration for we could do it. Look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys talking on a podcast. We could do that,
it's
right?
Easy. We can do that. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. That's fantastic. Yeah. But now you have how many?
A lot.
I mean, it's like you podcast a lot, right? All day? Yeah.
No, I mean, they're broken up throughout the week. So the primary shows that I do every week are, so I co-host The Rebound, which is me and John Moltz and Lex Friedman talking about tech. And that started, we just hit our 300th episode. So about 6 years ago. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So that was like a tech podcast that started right after I left Macworld. So that's been going for a while. We are on 359 of Clockwise, which is a show that Jason Snell and I started when we were at Macworld. Wow. And then continued to host when we left. And now I host with Micah Sargent, which is another tech roundtable podcast that we do, which is over at the Relay FM network. Mm-hmm. And so that one's been going, 7 years maybe. And then I host, I co-host some other stuff that's like less frequent. So Inconceivable is a game show that I host at The Incomparable, which is a nerdy trivia show, which I've been doing for probably 4 or 5 years, I think. But I've only done, 30 episodes or something. It doesn't go up very often. Mm-hmm. And then Lex Friedman and I host Not Playing with Lex and Dan, which we've been doing for 6 or 7 years. But we do like a season every year, which is somewhere between 6 to 13 episodes, depending on kind of what our time and availability is, where we watch movies and to talk about them. And then I guest on a bunch of shows. And I mean, most prominently The Incomparable, which has been going for almost, we're just about to hit the 10-year anniversary on The Incomparable.
Over 500 episodes.
Yeah, so it started in 2010, and it's been running pretty much weekly since 2010. And I, have been on a bunch of episodes of that, and of course all the spinoffs, Total Party Kill, and Game Show, and all the various things. And then actually the newest show, asterisk, which I know you're right? a listener of, is Biff, which is our show about comic book TV and movies and various other media, and that's with John Moltz and Guy English, and that started about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I want to say maybe a little more, and it's a reformat of the Speedy Arrowcast, which was our show where we covered the show Arrow, which started in the third season of Arrow, and I'd have to do some math, but that's probably 2011 12. No, it must be later than that. Can't even remember.
Yeah, it's so long now. So they got seven seasons, and it just ended in 2013.
Right. Yeah,
2016.
I was like, gotta do the math. We're backward. Yeah. No, I guess that would have been 2014 or so, maybe. Yeah, that sounds about right. 5 or 6 years ago.
Now the real question is, though, is season two of Arrow actually waiting in the wings for distribution?
It's never been recorded.
We don't break the
I'll
seal. We don't break. It's an emergency.
It is exactly. It's the we have nothing else to cover. We could go back.
It's your tertiary backup.
Yeah, because there are some like weird missing episodes in our collection because we started a few episodes into season three. So some of those got lost. And then there was one season, I want to say 5 or 6, where we started, a lot of stuff happened in the world that wasn't great. And then, I was away for several weeks, visiting my then girlfriend in India. And so we just like sort of let it sit. And then we came back later, but we never filled in. So like there's a few missing episodes here and there, but season two is the biggest chunk. Cause of course we went back and did all of season one as sort of a flashback. And I think we'll do season two at some point. I don't know
just to bring the lark home.
Yeah, I do. I feel like you need to sort of, square that circle, as it were.
Yeah,
you need
for completeness sake.
Exactly. And season two is great. That's the other thing.
Yeah,
it's like
that's
a
true.
Really
that's
good
the funny
season.
Thing about it, right? Yeah. So my 10-year-old has, well, he'll be 10 on the 17th. We're speaking in August, dear listeners. He'll be 10 very soon, and he has binged all 6 seasons of The Flash. And he hasn't checked out Arrow yet, but he has binged The Flash, and he's poked into Supergirl and Legends, but his Flash is his big thing. And it's been interesting to see the things that he susses out for himself and picks up on his own. The Arrow, Speedy Arrow cast goes back so far that, the t-shirt hasn't even been updated yet. So like, I'm like OG representing, which is a deep cut on its own, right? The t-shirt itself is a deep cut. So I'm like the only nerd in my area that knows anything about it.
Oh, but we're delighted whenever, the t-shirt, it's an exclusive item. I'll put it that way.
It is
available,
exclusive.
But like, there aren't that many people who have one.
And, you know, it's kind of like the Stonecutters Guild from The Simpsons. When you see one, you know one, right? That's it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So it's, yeah, we love doing Arrow. And I think we really enjoy doing Biff and getting to do a bunch of different comic book stuff, because we're all, I'm probably not the biggest comic book nerd on that show. In fact, I'm probably the least of the three of us in terms of comic book nerdery, because Guy and John both have much deeper, I think, and longer connection. I mean, they're old, let's put it that way. Yeah, they're old. But they were like, I was into comic books in the, you know, when I was a teenager, but it was never as much, it was sort of a thing I drifted into and then I kind of drifted out of, though somewhere there's like a box, you know, banker box full of all my stuff. But I don't have that much. I was much more into other pursuits. Like I got a, you know, two boxes of Magic cards over here that are like from that era.
There's a lot of like, people on that hook, buddy.
Yeah. So like there's a bunch, like I would get into stuff for like a year or two and I get out. And so I read comic books for a while. And then like later on, I had friends who were super into it and were like, oh, you got to read this run or you got to read this. Or like, you know, got into the other more alternate, like you got to read Watchmen, you got to read, you know, Brian Michael Bendis's stuff. You got to read all this other stuff. And so I would like dip in when other people told me there was something worth reading. Yeah. But I was not someone who, you know, made my weekly pilgrimage to the comic book store or anything like that. So I've always enjoyed the medium, but like I am not as steeped in that part of it. And yet it was always funny to me to go to the TV shows and to realize that somehow I had amassed this weird knowledge of like who all these characters were, and not even like the main characters, but like secondary characters. You're like, oh yeah, that's that person. I'm like, why do I know this? Like, where was I getting this information?
It just absorbed off the comic book pages.
Right, because it wasn't even like Wikipedia was a thing when I was reading comic books for the first time. So, like, yeah, it's weird.
And I think about that, too. I go back and I'm like, how did I have lore knowledge before the internet?
Yeah,
you know? And,
right.
I'm like, I had the very first issue of Nintendo Power, though. So I guess that's
part of it.
And, like, the first issue of the Next Generation magazine. I wish I still had them. you know, so they were out there. You just had to, you know, you were reading your books. And I guess it didn't feel like you were going to get information, so it just kind of landed. Whereas when you had to study something intently, it just never, you were like, ah, screw that. You know,
I read for like, there was some stuff I sought out. Like I remember I had a paperback book. It's probably on the shelf behind me right now. That was a guide to the Star Wars universe.
Oh, yeah.
It's this like thick paperback book. It's got a TIE fighter on the cover. And I think it was actually even the second edition of it or something. Probably came out 92, 93, maybe around there. And I will tell you, I know that because I got in trouble because I read it from cover to cover, including through one of my math classes in eighth grade. And my teacher caught me and confiscated it.
Oh, that's the worst.
I got it back. But yeah, I was reading that, which is, it's not a book, right? It's essentially like a dictionary or encyclopedia. And right, I was just reading it from cover to cover.
So I have, I was big into Robotech for like ninth and 10th grade, eighth and ninth grade. I have, still have my Robotech Art 1 book, right? And it's just full of captured images from the show and information about behind the scenes. And I can't tell you, you know, how much of that I read. It's still thankfully intact, but it could just very easily have been falling apart. But in a similar vein, I got busted reading a Robotech book in eighth grade history and had to go talk to the principal, and he called me in there and he said, what do you think you're able to sit there and read a book while everyone else is studying and listening to the teacher? And I said, well, Mr. Patterson, I have a 99% average in the class. So, you know, and he's like, well, I'll investigate that. And you have lunchtime detention. I was like, well, that's fine. But, you know, I know what my average is.
Yeah. Quiz me on Robotech history. I'll tell you anything.
I'll tell you anything you want to know. But yeah, so getting caught up in the, you know, the fantasy world and going back just a little bit to the kind of stories that you read as a young man, I read like a lot, maybe Dungeons and Dragons or Dragonlance, the Choose Your Own Adventure books. You know, that was always my go-to. I wanted to, and of course, you know, you always place your finger on the page to go back and take the other choice if you manage to get dead. Because where's the fun in, you know, ending the adventure, right? What would have happened if I made the other choice? And so I read a lot of those, and I didn't. I took it kind of in a different direction. You know, you started writing your own stories, and I attempted to. Right. I mean, you can kind of probably figure out how hard this would actually be. But I tried to write choose your own adventure games, in basic on a VIC 20.
Oh man, yeah. I can tell you, I did dabble with. I was writing basic. this is a dark and weird part. You'll love this actually. So when I was, let's say, 14, maybe a little younger than that. On one of my first Macs, I had Microsoft. Oh God, what was it at that point? Real Basic, Virtual Basic, something like that.
Mm-hmm, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I, you know, learned how to do some of the stuff in class. I was like, oh, great. I'll learn how to program. And I think I convinced my parents to buy like the programmer, and you could make legit like Mac apps out of it. Like, and so I made, this is going to be the most embarrassing thing I've admitted on a podcast ever. I made an app called Starfleet Files, where you literally typed in the name of like a Star Trek character. And I think they were all the TNG main characters and stuff. And it just gave you like a stat readout about them, like as if I essentially invented my own like RPG, but without any rules. It was just like a stat block for, you know, the Star Trek characters. And I literally distributed this on bulletin boards at the time. And people sent me money for it because that was the era that we lived in.
Oh,
people sent me shareware
best.
Fees. And like, what was hilarious about that was everyone who was sending me money was also a stupid teenager, because like, yeah, I would literally get an envelope with like quarters in it. That's and like hilarious. Dollar bills stuffed up, which you're not supposed to do, but I didn't know at that point. So I probably made $20 off that program at some point.
It's $20 more than you had.
Yeah, I know. So James Thompson can suck it. I'm a developer. I know what I'm doing. but I learned and after that, later on, we got more ambitious. And at one point I did try to make like a dungeon crawl using HyperCard. Yeah, that was great. Sadly, it's long, long lost through the seas of time. But I do remember.
Gone, huh?
Oh God, yeah, it was so cool though. Like HyperCard was so dope, so ahead of its time.
It was. It was a great way to, you know, without any fear, really get into the programming idea, right? You know, you can do some pretty fantastic stuff with a HyperCard stack.
And it was easy to do like graphics and stuff, which was the thing, right? Like that's the hard part of doing a lot of programming is like, how do I draw things, right? And HyperCard was like, just put some pictures in. It's fine.
So we'll do the work. That was so that would have been about 94 then. That's when I was getting really into the Mac through college. My uncle was he's just a bit older than me. He's only about 3 years ahead of me. So we grew up very close. And so he was still in school when I went to school, and he was involved in the college newspaper, the Echo, up at University of Central Arkansas. And so I was basically the staff gopher, and I learned. So I remember when Photoshop got color support. I used Photoshop 1.0 as just because it was installed somewhere and I could use it, but I'm not actually any good at it, but I got to run it as fun. Zip drives and jazz discs and all that stuff, man. I ran stuff all over for the Echo, but we don't have anything like HyperCard these days to kind of make it. I guess Swift Playgrounds kind of meets that.
Yeah, it's the closest thing, but it's not quite the same.
You don't get producible code really out of that.
Right, yeah. So I played around with that a little bit, but like I feel like it's perhaps geared at someone more introductory than me. It's like I've got like medium knowledge, not a lot of knowledge, but like just a little bit.
As they say, enough to be dangerous.
Yeah, but that's exactly right.
I will shout out to James Thompson because I specifically, they're absolutely fantastic apps. It's amazing how he's pulled pCalc from like Pascal in classic Mac OS all the way kicking and dragging through, Big Sur soon to come. I use pCalc and I use Dice by pCalc, one, because they're great apps, and two, because the icons are 42. And three, because the panda stickers. There's so many reasons to love that app. I have a friend, one of my leads at work. He loves pandas, and he is a sport 4Runner driver. And so, if you've ever looked in the stickers, they're all pandas except for one, which is a 4Runner. And then maybe even the same color as Aaron's 4Runner. But I was like, you have to have this app. So I gifted him pCalc so that he could have the stickers. I play a lot of D&D. or role playing too. So, you know, hearing remotely, I've got my old 27 inch 2011 iMac Thunderbolt displayed to my MacBook. So I could put PCAL or dice in like literally one half of the screen and have just this giant dice tray. And it's ridiculous, but fun. You know, I've got my character sheet on one side, my dice tray on the other. What more can a nerd need in 2020, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, man, it covers all the bases.
Yeah. And I think that maybe the first place that I heard you was on Total Party Kill. Other than I think either that or listening to the Rocketeer episode of The Incomparable. And I tell you, I loved The Rocketeer before I found out about you loving The Rocketeer. But now, like, I can't not think of you every time I see something Rocketeer themed, because, you know, it's a criminally overlooked movie.
I agree. I was just looking the other day. I have on my bookshelf, somebody gave me at one point the Rocketeer novelization. I was like, maybe I should read that. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
I know, right? Oh, so speaking of, I don't know if that's a good idea. Stick with that gut, because I made the mistake after, you know, 15 or 20 years of telling myself it wasn't worth the risk. I got too bored one evening when I was working overnight as the IT guy for my local library. And, you know, just being bored, I played Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. And so, you know, don't put your heroes at risk, man.
That's fair.
You know, all against Christopher Reeve, but just don't diminish them in any way.
I will confess to never having seen the third or fourth movies. I've seen the first two, but I've never seen the third or fourth.
Well, and you know, we can address that because one, Superman is where it all started for me. And you know, he has Superman the movie, Batman 1989, and Into the Spider-Verse are sacrosanct. Captain America, the first Avenger. They are sacrosanct superhero movies, right? They equal each other in what they have accomplished for the superhero movie genre. And so they can't be equaled except unto themselves, right? So everything else ranks below that. And so with that, that's where Superman started. And then Superman 2 is great until you realize everything that went on behind the scenes. And then you have the Richard Donner cut, which to me is the canon, right? And then you get Superman Returns.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And man, Brandon Routh, though, come on. That was great.
He's great. Yeah. We really enjoyed watching that for Biff because I think I had not seen that since I probably saw it in the theater. And I remembered a bunch of it, but had forgotten many other parts. But like, for all its weaknesses, there's a lot going for it, especially when stacked up against modern Superman movies that feel like they don't understand Superman at all. And so seeing the Brandon Routh, like, first of all, it's just like, I don't need a Superman who runs around killing people. I need a Superman who saves people. And that's what he spends a lot of that movie doing. And that's great. That is what Superman is about.
And I think you guys made the point that he doesn't throw a single punch in that film.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
And I had to rewatch it and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But you know, I cried, Dan. I'm not gonna lie. When I sat down in the theater and watched that, and Brandon just had the essence of Christopher, right?
Yeah.
And it just felt like Superman to me. And I kind of teared up a little bit. My wife was with me. And you know, because it was like I was 2, 3, 4, 5 years old all over again. Seeing my hero who can do no wrong, and then to get to see him revisit that character as Kingdom Come Superman, just
so good.
We were denied more Brandon as Superman. And you know, to not get too deep into the woods, but when you are given the mantle of that cape, you have to continually earn that cape. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You can lose that cape, Dean Cain.
Sure. It's a privilege. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then you can continue to earn it, Brandon Routh. And those are two contrasts that I just want to put that out there.
It's funny because that TV show in my teens was something that I watched a lot, and I watched it with my mom, who was a fan of it. And it's certainly, you know, the memory of it has certainly been tarnished in recent
times. And that's
unfortunate,
you know.
It is. Damn
but
shame.
You know, like I said, you don't, it's hard to get to know your heroes. You know, sometimes they don't stand out or stand up to what your expectation is.
Are you subtweeting me right now? Is that what's happening?
I am not. No, this is absolutely fantastic. Not in the least, my friend. This has been and is great. I have had an absolutely thoroughly good time. So comic books, movies, superheroes, writing about science fiction. Your big gig, I take it, is Star Wars over the rest. Is that supremo?
That would be, you know, I will say in recent years, the MCU is something I've been more excited about, uh-huh. but Star Wars is definitely always first.
What
for
a mastercraft the Marvel Cinematic Universe is.
I find myself thinking about it a lot more than I would have figured because I was, like I said, I was a comic book fan and I knew who all those characters were. Like there are very few, if any, characters that were introduced at least early on in the MCU is like, oh yeah, I don't know who they are. Or no, like kind of their backstory and stuff. But just to think about, you know, I think I just found myself yesterday thinking about Infinity War and Endgame and thinking like, man, you know, even if the pandemic makes it so there's never another MCU movie, like at least.
Well, they landed it.
Yeah, exactly. They totally nailed something that had never been done before and did it well. And it tells a cohesive story. And like, I'm excited to see more in the future. But like, even if that was all we got, I would feel pretty good about it.
You know, I think a good analogy is they, you know, they landed a helicarrier in a field with an outbreak in any blades of grass. You know, they really just set it down gentle. It's a complete story.
Exactly.
And to know where it started with Iron Man, you remember when you were like, they're going to make an Iron Man movie? No, I mean, I know who Iron Man is.
Oh yeah, exactly. Actually, I was a big Iron Man fan. I had an Iron Man figure as a kid that I remembered even before I like knew who it was. I just remember having the action figure. And so when they started making it, it's like, oh yeah, Iron Man, I know Tony Stark.
Iron Man. Yeah, I know who that is. And then, you know, knowing a little bit about Tony Stark and RDJ gets cast and you're like, well, that's typecasting. You know, at the time, but he's really come. He talk about earning the mantle, right? Really stepped up to that. But Iron Man, I had the opportunity. This guy I knew, he had all of his comics from the 60s, and so he let me go through them as a teenager, 13, 14 years old, and sort them and read them, and then give them back to him. I couldn't keep any of them, but he had Iron Man 1-11. Original.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, I read them, man. It was great. And Daredevil #7, where Daredevil would change his costumes. Mm-hmm. And even though it was tattered and missing the cover, the Avengers #4, The Return of Captain America.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So some cherry stuff that, you know, it was nice. Having the history in your hands is sometimes just as wonderful as being able to keep it yourself, but man, I really wanted to hold on to some of those books. But it was a nice treat to get to, you know, put them in, to take care of them for him, and also get to take advantage of having them, you know, in my hands and everything. So, what are you working on right now, Dan?
A few different things. I don't have anything official contracted at the moment, so I'm just sort of playing around with a few different ideas.
Hanging out with Jason and keeping the site running.
Yeah, exactly. I'm paying the bills, doing podcasts, running that. But I am working on new ideas for novels. I actually have a novel that's been making the rounds for a while and trying to find a home for it, which is a contemporary fantasy novel. So it takes place in Boston in the present day, well, pre-coronavirus. I'm not going to change it for that. But it's got a sort of, I think urban fantasy kind of gets run around a lot, but it's a supernatural detective. And there's some tie-ins with technology stuff, you know, that I'm obviously big invested in. So kind of an interesting mesh story between technology and magic and that kind of thing. I'm very excited. I love that book a lot. I'm really hoping we find a home for it and we can get it out there because I think it'll find a good audience. And then I'm sort of dabbling in this sort of second world fantasy novel that I'm working on that I don't really, I'm still in early phase where I'm trying to figure stuff out and try to figure out what kind of story I'm telling there. So it's going to be a while probably before I produce something along those lines. I'm hopeful that there will be another Galactic Cold War book. And I've, you know, sketched out some ideas. I kind of know where that's going, but I'm, you know, waiting to sort of see if it, we decide to move forward with that series. Obviously, if we, you know, obviously I'd love to get the story out there in some form or another. So we'll have to see how that goes. But I'm excited because I've had like a, there's an arc in my head. You know, we just talked about Endgame stuff. It's like, I know where that series ends. And I know,
speaking of landing, you know, your helicarriers.
Exactly. Like, I know where I'm going with that, and I hope I get the opportunity to deliver on it.
I do too, because, you know, I think about it, I'm like, what does it take to be a writer? You know, how do you get these stories and these threads to connect? And then I thought about, you know, that one time I sat down to write a character backstory for this little halfling barbarian that I've got, and it just kept going and going, and then this thread, mm-hmm. and then that, and I was like, oh, this is how you do it. And then you have to go back and take the paragraphs and slice them off so that you find out where you're going from them. And then I kind of got it, and I was like, oh yeah, no, that's why I'm not a writer.
Yeah, it's hard work. It's hard work, but it's good. Yeah. I mean, having the germ of the idea is the most important thing. Everything else is just like nose to the grindstone working at it, but like coming up with the actual like first thing that sparks and you're like, oh, this person's interesting. Why am I interested in this person? And then, yeah, the rest is just
kind of want to get to know them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, Dan, unfortunately, I think we both have things to tend to other than hanging out for another hour or two. This is not the talk show with John Gruber, so we don't have to go for 3 hours. But I do like to make sure that, you know, leave the open invitation, bring the show to a close, not to an end, so that there's always an opportunity for you to come back and we visit again and catch up to where you are at that point, if you're open to that idea. But I want to give you one last opportunity to put your plugs out there, let people know where to find you. It is not S'mores, by the way. It is D. Morin. But go
Thanks,
ahead
Otto
and
Christ.
Let us know where to find you.
Yeah, sure. You can find me, D. Morin, on Twitter. DMorin.com is my site where you can see all about my books, the podcasts I do, other writing. You can find my tech stuff, sixcolors.com, and at Macworld, where I still do a column. And then my podcasts, like I said, there's a lot of them. But Clockwise, the over Relay FM, The Rebound, and Inconceivable and other stuff at theincomparable.com.
Fantastic. And I recommend if you're nerd inclined or nerd proxied to check out the Incomparable Network of podcasts. There's something for everyone there. Absolutely covers the gamut of what you might be interested in. So you will definitely have plenty to listen to. Well, Dan, I do appreciate you. Thank you so much for making time for me today and being here on Bad Choices and Bourbon. Dear listeners, I appreciate having your ears. If you like what you hear and you want to support the show, you can reach out to me at Dan Decker, DanDecker on Twitter. And you can also find me on Instagram there. But the best way you can offer your support is through becoming a patron on Patreon. And that is patreon.com/DanDecker. And I look forward to hearing from you. Leave comments, DM me if you need anything at all. If you're hurting out in the world or you need somebody to talk to, just reach out to me. I'm always there to listen and offer anything that I can to be of support. And with that, we're going to go ahead and say good evening from the Toad Suck Studio in Central Arkansas. This has been Bourbon and Bad Choices with Dan Decker and our guest, Dan Morin. Thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me.
Click this back on one more time. You know, this is like a little post-show thing. I have to do this because I have to ask for my Biff rating.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, yeah. So how would you rate the show? What kind of Biff rating do we get?
Oh, okay. Well, I would give this a 3-star out of 3-star Biff. I think this is a truly... a tri-star Biff, if you will.
That's fantastic. Well, I, you know, with my Star Trek podcast, we say we produce A+ D grade content. It's the best D grade content you're going to get regarding Star Trek. So, you know, if we can meet that standard or above, I think 3-star Biffs is a good bet. All right. So thank you for that. And this is the actual end of the show, listeners. He's got time.
He's not busy.
That's funny. He actually responded to me 800 ages ago when he was running the Crazy Apple Rumors site, and I sent him a few emails when as the Apple turns shut down. That's a crossover event for you.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was way back. And then you and I also share the fact that we've been paid to write for Macworld.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I sent in a tip back in 97, and they sent me a check for $25.
Oh, wow. That's pretty sweet.
I know. Big spending, right?
around that era, I had a letter published in Macworld.
See, which there
was
you go.
About, it was about, oh shoot, it was about, it was a correction about a Star Wars starfighter. They used like the wrong termination or something.
That's hilarious. Wrong,
yeah, of course it was. We found it. Jason helped me find it once when I was in the office years ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I think I have, feel like I have a scan of it somewhere, but I need to actually dig it up. But it was, I showed it to one of my coworkers at Macworld at the time, and she's just like, "You're such a nerd."
Of course, yeah, of course. True. That's how it goes. So what I'll do is do kind of a cold intro, no music, anything like that. I just say, "Hey, welcome to the show. This is who I'm talking to. This is where I'm coming from." And you're in Boston, yeah? Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, okay. I always wanted you to be on the left coast, and then I finally made it in my brain that you're on the east coast.
Do you want a recording from me?
You can if you want to. I get a pretty solid sound through so Audio Hijack splits us into two channels. So
sure.
I get
I've got call recorder running because it always runs.
Perfect.
So if you need you need a track from me, I'm happy to provide it.
Perfect. And so yeah, basically, and then I'll say, you know, hey, here's Dan Morin, and we'll start with you know, I usually tell folks you either got here by typical means, or if you didn't, that's an extraordinary story I'm willing to scoop as well. So, you know, most folks are born of woman. Some folks arrive by spaceship, but let's figure
that's
it
true.
Out.
That's true.
All right. So we'll just go ahead and I get a little breather in, and then we'll get started. Okay.
Okay. Right.
Oh, and there's a less than zero chance that my Wi-Fi will cut out on this MacBook, even though it's brand stupid new. but it happens where I sit. I don't know why. And I could be in the other part of the house. Anyway, it may drop. I'll get it back.
That's the worst problem to troubleshoot is the weirdly intermittent location-based problem.
Why did it just do that? Yeah. And I am 6 feet from the router, so it shouldn't happen. Yep. But anyway, here we go.